105 The Zone. This is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Just like that, halfway through our Friday show on 104.5 The Zone. Chad Withrow with you, Paul Kuharski with you, Jonathan Hutton. He will be back with us next Monday. Monday, I guess we should say now, not next Monday. Whatever, Monday. David Reed will be back then also. We're going to be happy to get the band back together. We're happy to have the band together today. The Titans Pro Shop inside of Nissan Stadium. Some great deals going on here. Good crowd rolling through here, buying some stuff, getting ready for Sunday. Stop in, say hello, and get geared up for Sunday. Every Friday at this time, it is the VolQuest Power Hour with Austin Price and Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. It's presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. From mortgages to auto loans, they do it all. You can visit Old Hickory Credit Union online at ohcu.org as we say hello to Brent Hubbs and Austin Price. Guys, at some point, I mean, we're going to talk Tennessee football, but I feel like we should get Hubs' breakdown of a Beverly Hills 90210 alum and their career post-Beverly Hills 90210. I don't know which actress we'll go with this time or actor, but at some point we need to hit that, Hubs.
Well, I don't think we're allowed to look at each other, right? I mean, is this a guest appearance on a great show, so I'm not allowed to look at you and make eye contact? That's the biggest news out of that show the last 6 months, right?
That's right. It's almost like when Nick Saban walks through the office. You know, he says there can be no eye contact with anyone at any point. You don't look directly into the Saban at any time.
Like the sun.
And apparently Jimmy Brumbaugh is not going to be looking directly into the eyes of Jeremy Pruitt anytime soon also. There was a report from Kentucky Sports Radio guys that said he was fired in-game. Austin, you broke the story at VolQuest.com, and I know you wrote about this as well. That doesn't seem to be the case with this firing. What can you tell us about what went into this to the decision and when it was actually done?
Well, I'm not going to, hate on somebody else's report. That's their report. They talk to. I know who I talk to. And, I think Coach Pruitt probably fired Coach Brumbaugh at halftime, of every game in his mind. And but it was Sunday morning when he met with Coach Brumbaugh that he relieved him of his duties. This is something, Brent, that he looked at doing, even going into the Georgia game when the Vols were 2-0 and was talked out of it by people on campus. And after last Saturday, had seen enough and, decided to move in a different direction.
Yeah, he had not seen enough at the half because Tennessee had given up 75 yards of offense and 4 first downs, I think, in the first half. But after watching what happened in the second half, I think he felt like he needed to follow his gut instincts and make the move. He did not feel like in the preseason that that group practiced very hard, that they competed the way he wanted to, and they didn't compete for an entire practice the way they wanted to. As for when it occurred, I'm with Austin, and I know who he's talked to. He knows who I've talked to. It happened on Sunday morning. Otherwise, why is Jimmy Brumbaugh in a team huddle midway through the third quarter with Jeremy Pruitt talking to defensive linemen about changes during a timeout? So if you fire a guy at the half or you fire him in the middle of the game, doesn't he leave the field? I've heard that Jimmy Brumbaugh, somebody's put out there, Jimmy Brumbaugh gave Kentucky the game plan at the half. He gave him signals, yet he was standing next to Pruitt for the second half of football with a headset on, handling substitution for the defensive lineman. So I don't think he was fired till Sunday morning.
Who fired Jimmy Brumbaugh? Was it LBJ? Was it the mob? Was it Russia, Cuba?
Was Colonel Mustard in the library?
Boy, you would really have a story on your hands if he gave the game plan to Kentucky at halftime. There's no doubt about that. Here's what jumps out to me about this, though, guys, and I'll start with Brent on this one. The faith shown from Philip Fulmer. If anyone ever wanted to have any doubts about Philip Fulmer's belief in Jeremy Pruitt to turn this thing around to the level that Philip Fulmer wants it turned around and the Vols fans want it turned around, it's the fact that he's allowing Jeremy Pruitt to fire a guy after a 34-7 home loss to Kentucky. Cost the university $830,000, at least right now, until Jimmy Brumbaugh gets another job. This goes on top of a $100,000 fine for wearing a babushka on a nationally televised game against Georgia. That's almost $1 million his head coach has cost him. And Philip Fulmer just continues to say yes to these expenses in the middle of a pandemic where they're laying people off, where people are getting furloughed. That is a lot of faith shown from the AD to a head coach to say yes to all these things.
Well, I mean, it goes to go in a different direction. It costs you $12 million to do something with the head coach, which Philip Fulmer's not remotely ready to do. We're not even thinking about doing at this point. I think the question becomes moving forward, I mean, mulligans does your head coach get? And so far he's been given, you know, mulligans like Austin gives me on the number one tee. And that is as many as I want. You know, you can get a whole sleeve off the tee box because Austin's going to take my money anyway. But you know, how many times do you get a redo? Jeremy Pruitt's got plenty of redos thus far, and he's getting another one on the defensive line. You know, I think that's the question Tennessee fans is how many more redos you're going to get till you get it right.
How about at quarterback now? You know, the opponent makes it that you have to be delicate here. You don't want to get a new guy killed and kill his confidence and all of that. So you're just trying to make it through this game and you roll the same guy out even though you know he's not that good? Or you have some confidence in your offensive line that they could keep a new guy upright, at least as a rotational guy? You wrote about, you know, his gut told him to fire this defensive line coach. What's his gut telling him to stick with Jarrett?
Yes, that's the simple answer. I mean, I think, you know, I think there was even, you know, they kind of went around the room as a staff this week and kind of said, okay, who gives us the best chance to win? Do we need to make a move at quarterback? And I think as a staff, they, you know, believe that Jarrett still gives them the best chance to win. Is that an indictment against them being able to get somebody ready? I guess so. Is that an indictment against their evaluations and recruiting? I would say so. But, you know, I think when you're a coach, you're there every day. You see, you know, two or three different quarterbacks put you in bad positions, force balls into traffic and can't even get you lined up. That's where the lack of faith in some of these other players, you know, to pull the trigger and put them at quarterback goes. And so, yeah, I think that Jarrett starts the game. I think you're going to see multiple quarterbacks, though. I think Harrison Bailey will play. He's gotten a lot of work this week, and as they continue to push him, I don't think they'll go with Shrout, and I don't think they'll go with Maurer. I think it'll be JG, then Harrison Bailey.
You're playing multiple quarterbacks, Paul, and I think you have to view this from the standpoint of what do I need to do? What can I do over the course of the next 2 weeks, which includes a football game Saturday, to have my team figured out, have an offensive identity figured out as I go to Arkansas and play down the stretch of the season against Arkansas, A&M, you know, Auburn, Vanderbilt, and Florida to try to win those football games. So I think that you start – I think they're going to start JG. They'll play multiple quarterbacks, and then they're going to try to have to figure out what can we do to win football games in November?
To your point there, I think for them to give JG and or Harrison Bailey some help, but more specifically JG, you know, he's late getting the ball out a lot of times. I think you need to trot out some of these younger wide receivers. It's something I know that Jeremy Pruitt has specifically pushed, not just at receiver, but other positions like safety as well. You know, this week in practice, does that mean that those kids are all of a sudden going to start and going to play all the reps? No, but I think you're going to see them incrementally more than you saw them the first 4 weeks. So, you know, I think, you know, being able to get separation, having, you know, Jimmy Callaway and Jimmy Holiday and some of those guys at receiver, you're going to see them get more and more reps. I think you're going to see a guy like Tamarion McDonald this weekend at safety for the Vols, even if it's in small reps. You know, I think you're still going to see him where you hadn't seen him before.
I'm going to get back into this idea of the mulligan with Jeremy Pruitt. Three different games, three different seasons now, the mulligan game, and ask these guys about that. And we will preview Tennessee, Alabama as well. And we're going to discuss a lack of offensive creativity. And Austin just hinted at it, getting some more guys involved. I'm going to ask the guys about that moving forward as well and how much you can get done in a week versus how much you can get done in 2 weeks, which Tennessee will get the bye week after this game against Alabama. It is the VolQuest Power Hour. It's presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. We'll be back with the guys. You're listening to the Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
Ryan Tannehill, Christian Fulton, and Corey Davis play here on your home for Titans football. 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back. It's the Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Chad Withrow, Paul Kuharsky with you on this Friday. And we are in the middle of our VolQuest Power Hour on 104.5 The Zone with Brent Hobbs and Austin Price, presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. From mortgages to auto loans, they do it all. Visit Old Hickory Credit Union online at ohcu.org. Brent, you mentioned the mulligan concept with all the coaching hires with Jeremy Pruitt. I've now seen a consistent theme, and I'm going to go through three different games, and maybe you guys can point to another one also. Each of his three seasons now in Knoxville, and we're not yet halfway through season three, but it seems like it's a recurring theme with a mulligan game where it's inexplicable how poorly prepared the team looks, how poorly they play. Vanderbilt in year one, where they're playing for a bowl game, and so is Vanderbilt. They had no interest in playing in a bowl. It had no interest in the season, and Vanderbilt killed them, and not a very good Vanderbilt team. Obviously, Georgia State to open season two. And now I'm going to throw Kentucky in there, 34-7 loss at home. It's no huge crime to lose to this Kentucky team. They're pretty good. But to lose like that, to me, is inexplicable. What do you guys make of these three performances and what seems to now be a consistent theme with Jeremy Pruitt? Brent, let's start with you on this one.
Well, I think all three games are different. I think that Vanderbilt game, there was, you know, the Tyson Helton experience was, I think, over in everybody's mind on staff at that point. And I'm not sure if Tyson Helton called many plays that day. Tyson might want to answer that question. He may not, but I don't think that – I think they did some things in that game that maybe they hadn't even prepared for all week. And I think there was a lot of offensive issues going on behind the scenes for that game. The Georgia State game, I think Tennessee probably didn't take Georgia State serious enough. Then they had problems lining up on defense, and they played a bunch of different combinations on the offensive line and got themselves, you know, in an ugly loss there, which is inexcusable. This game against Kentucky, you know, they when you turn it over four straight possessions in the first half, you're going to have a hard time winning a football game and give up 17 points that way. I think the bigger concern out of the Kentucky game in terms of big picture thing is the fact that after the three and out to start the second half, Tennessee didn't seem a whole lot interested. And they weren't into that game on either side of the ball in the second half. And that's a 17-7 game at the half, and you've played poorly. You've given them 17 points. You get the ball to start the second half. You can't make a first down, and you punted the football to them, and you never slowed Kentucky's offense down in the second half. So, I'm not sure they played with great effort in the second half, which is a big picture concern. But I think in all three cases, and none of them are excusable, I think all three have different scenarios involved with all three games.
Yeah, ironically, Chad, after you know, Jeremy Pruitt, you know, and Tyson Helton parted ways, he wasn't having him back, but Tyson got another job at Western Kentucky. You know, I wrote, you know, that Jeremy Pruitt, you know, he loves golf, and I wrote that he got a mulligan. And I remember getting a call, why are you calling it a mulligan? Yes. I mean, like, you hit it out of bounds, and we gave you another shot, and then you hired Jim Chaney. So at that point, he hadn't even hired Chaney. But, I mean, like, you got another chance to, you know, to make a reprieve on offense after, you know, making the mistake of hiring Tyson Helton, someone you did not really trust. But you're right, to make this more about the games, if you go back, they end with Vanderbilt and then start with Georgia State. So two of these are kind of back-to-back games, even though they're in separate seasons. One's a season ender, one's the kickoff to the season. But, you know, trying to get these kids motivated and not having them lose interest is something that this staff obviously is going to have to figure out, because, as Brent pointed out, at the, you know, after the initial drive of the second half last week, much like basically the entire Vanderbilt game at the end of year one, there wasn't a whole lot of interest there.
So Alabama's run defense is not necessarily what you would typically expect. how much might the strategy here be Gray, and as much as you could feed him? It seems to be the lead guy now. And how much is that reliant on what's pieced together on their banged up offensive line?
Well, I think no matter whether you start JG, whether Harrison Bailey's playing a whole lot, I think Tennessee's got to run the ball. Alabama has been a little more vulnerable to giving up yards, giving up points. Now, they did shut out Georgia at the end of last week in the second half, but this is an Alabama defense that's not your, you know, Alabama defense from 10 years ago, and much like it's not your Alabama offense from 10 years ago. The program's evolved on both sides of the ball. And so, you know, Tennessee's got to find a way to run the football tomorrow to protect your quarterback, to shorten the game. And then, you know, I think just continue to build confidence with an offensive line that, you know, going into tomorrow, Brent, is still very banged up. I don't think Jerome Carvin will play. Jameer Johnson seems like he will not be back until Arkansas. I think Carvin could play, but I think, you know, it's more about getting them healthy and getting them ready for Arkansas than it is anything else. So I think Spraggins is somebody you'll very well see a lot of reps out of tomorrow. And then Cade Mays, did they play him at right tackle, left tackle? I think he can bounce around.
Football to have a chance, because look, you're not going to, if you're going to try to make this a 60-minute game, if Mac Jones and that offense is getting a bunch of possessions in the first half, you're going to have a hard time making it a 60-minute game, because the best defense you have for those guys is with them on the sideline. And so if you're Tennessee, you better shorten the game, you better slow the game down, and you better be able to convert third downs and stay on the field. You got to throw it, you got to be balanced, but you have to have some running success in order to stay on the field. And I think Gray's their best offensive weapon right now. He's been their most consistent weapon. He's averaging nearly 6 yards a touch in the passing game and the run game. And they've got to feed him as much as he can handle, I think, in a variety of ways to stay on the field and move the chains.
I think I speak for a lot of Tennessee fans when I say this. A frustration with Jim Chaney in this offense is a lack of try it. And what I mean by that is, why not try this? If Kentucky and Eddie Grant can lose their two quarterbacks and put a wide receiver at quarterback and run a wing T for a season and be effective, what's stopping Tennessee from putting Jimmy Holiday in a package? What's stopping Tennessee? And Austin's laughing right now, but I don't know what's funny about it, because other teams can do it. Why not Tennessee in terms of even simplifying the playbook? If it's too difficult and there's too much progression out there for your quarterback, well, give them two options. Do something different. Is there going to be any attempt to do something different from Tennessee moving forward, I guess, is my question. And we'll start with Austin.
Well, Chad, and I laugh because you said the wing tee, just because the thought of any kind of college team rolling out the wing tee is comical to me. But at the same time, your point's made. Why not try something different? I get it. As a fan, you're tired of seeing number two go out there. Even if the coaches feel like that's the guy that gives them the best chance to win, the fans will be happy if they roll out Paxton Brooks to play quarterback. You know, I mean, like, it's just anybody. You know, but the coaches don't think in those terms. But you're right. Brent, Jim Chaney has packages in every week. Now, whether he calls for them is a different thing. And so to me, at some point, somebody's got to say, hey, look, you know, we got to be a little more imaginative on offense, a little more creative. You heard Jeremy Pruitt. He basically called out Jim Chaney last week for a couple of the calls in that football game against Kentucky. Those two met on Sunday to get on the same page, to kind of have, you know, the same vision. And one would hope that, you know, what they're doing this week is something that is a collaboration of the entire offensive staff and the head coach together, and kind of, you know, one vision.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think it's all about personnel and creating creativity either. Look, I mean, I think we did the power hour after the Missouri game, and we talked about how they caught Missouri off guard with the jumbo set, and then they had some schematic things where they pulled tackles. You don't normally see that. That was effective in the run game. Had a couple of wrinkles there that caused problems. They opened the second half at South Carolina, fast tempo to cause some problems there. I don't think they've been very creative the last 2 weeks. And creative last week probably should have been turning and handing it off 95% of the time, because Kentucky was giving you 4 yards a gain.
Or punting on first down.
Yeah, you know, they weren't stacking the line of scrimmage. I mean, they didn't have nine in the box. They were playing, you know, two safeties deep, saying, "Hey, drive the length of the field. Will you be patient enough to do that?" And Tennessee wasn't patient enough to do that. As for personnel, and this is my frustration. Austin's heard this all week. He's tired of hearing about it. But if Malachi Wideman can play four snaps in the fourth quarter and all four routes are a nine route or a takeoff route, surely to the Lord, he could have ran one in the first quarter. Okay? I mean, listen, we saw Jim Chaney. I'm a fan of Jim Chaney. I've always been a fan of Jim Chaney. We saw him with Tyler Bray as a freshman and two freshman receivers who didn't know the offense, and they turned to the sideline, and they got a play call. And they ran that play call. They did not adjust based on what the defensive back was doing to turn a nine route into a 12-step, you know, 12-yard comeback or whatever. They just ran what was called, and they threw it, okay? I still think you can play football that way with some young players. You don't have to do it every snap. But, look, if you want to throw a fade on third and eight, okay, throw it to Malachi Wideman in the first quarter. Don't wait till the fourth quarter and you're down four touchdowns.
Up on the Midday 180, Brent Hubbs will pass the offering plate and he'll sing Beulah Land as Revival, Walkless Revival, continues.
And Brent, amen on that. I'm with you there. Here's something else that I jotted down, and I've been thinking about it all week. Tennessee has such a hard time stopping the slant and defending the middle of the field. You would think that their offensive coaches would see that during the game and think, boy, this is a pretty effective approach. Maybe that's a throw that Garantano can make. And then when I tweet that out, everyone says, well, the quarterback can't throw it. He's late on throws. He's behind. He's high. When you do that on a slant, it's picked every single time. Is that why they don't throw the slant? Where am I missing
Chad
the lack of attempts
on
the slant?
This all week.
I've been on a slant bender all week with this Tennessee offense. Where is the slant in the Tennessee offense, guys?
You know, Tennessee fans probably have been on a lot of benders this week. I don't know that any of them have been on a slant bender or a bender because of the slant. But, you know, I think there's a couple things with the slant. One, you got to have a receiver who can beat the DB inside and create some separation if the DB's playing a good slant technique. I think that has to happen there. And you've got to be able to read and see the field. I mean, they threw it in the middle of the field. It wasn't a slant. They threw it in the middle of the field. It was an 85-yard pick six by a linebacker. So you got to see the field there. You know, I think Tennessee's issue in the slant is they just don't cover. They just don't technique-wise cover it very well. They don't disguise it very well. I was watching the Fox NFL game last night, and I heard Troy Aikman talking about how the Giants were vulnerable in the middle of the field and defending the pass because they're playing split safety coverage in the back end, which Tennessee plays a lot of. So that opens them up for some of that. I don't know if other teams are opening up the slant in the middle of the field for people or not, but you know, I think part of it is your receiver's got to get separation. Your quarterback's got to throw it on time. He's got to throw it in the right spot. I don't know that they have a whole lot of trust there. To me, it's an easy throw. Or it looks, at least against Tennessee, it's an easy throw. I mean, Terry Wilson was 9 of 10 in the middle of the field last week. So maybe it's a trust factor with quarterback. Maybe it's the fact that they don't get a receiver out there and get separation on that route. I don't know the answer to that one. It's a good question.
Well, and you saw some success with that route. I'll go back to Brian Maurer. I know he's been injured. But a year ago against Georgia, when they went more of the RPO game with him, he was successful going across the middle to a big body receiver like a Juwan Jennings, let's say, looked like he could throw that route. What is the status of Brian Maurer? Is it an injury problem? What exactly is going on there? Because it does appear that he's the one guy who's different at quarterback, that if Tennessee went with him, it would change the way they play with a lot more RPO.
He's stuck over there with the scout team. He's fine. He's healthy. I mean, yeah, in fall camp, he had a hamstring. But, I mean, that's something that's really nagging him right now. You know, he was out there, you know, running the scout team the last several days. Tennessee just has no desire to kind of go in that direction. I do know in talking to some people, you know, you go back a year ago, and I put this on our website today. I'm like, I'm never under – and I've said this on this show and the VolQuest podcast and everything I do. I've never understood the love affair with Brian Maurer. He had a deep ball on a double move. He threw into double and triple coverage a lot last season, and he ran down the ball while high-fiving all the fans. So does he offer a different skill set than the other guys? You're 100% correct. He does. But if you line up your offensive teammates around you wrong on a regular basis, how much can the coaches trust you to go out there and operate the offense and do it at a high level?
Well, I think part of the reason why there's a love affair there is his name's not Jerry Garantano.
100%.
And I think fans are at the point of put somebody else back there. And look, he's come in and he moved the team, and then there's some adjustments. And here's the thing with Brian. I think Brian has a skill set, as Austin mentioned, that nobody else in the quarterback room has. I think that he has talent to play at this level. I don't think he lacks the talent. I'm not sure if JT Schrout can play at this level. I think Brian Maurer physically can play at this level. The problem with Brian Maurer is he was given opportunities. Go back to the bowl game last year. Jared's playing bad. Here's your opportunity to take it and run with it. And Brian played worse, and you had to come back with Jared. The same reason Brian was bad at Kentucky, and you had to come back with Jared with a splint and a club on his hand, on his non-throwing hand, because that was the only way you had a chance to win that football game, because Brian did not play well enough. So he's had his opportunities. I'm a little surprised he's not gotten any more of an opportunity this fall. Maybe it's the injury. Maybe it's a complete lack of trust. But he has not been without opportunity to win this job a year ago.
Which goes back to one development, but two, it's their decision-making on taking quarterbacks. They decided to pass on Adrian Martinez because Tyson Helton, you know, didn't go hard there, was okay with him, you know, going to Nebraska. They didn't fight real hard to keep Adrian Martinez. Is Adrian Martinez a world beater? No, but he'd be better than JT Schrout. And then the following year, Tennessee was very much deep in the mix for Sam Howell. In fact, I think they probably would have landed Sam Howell had the staff decided to go hard on him, but they didn't. They decided not to go real hard on Sam Howell. He started for 2 years at North Carolina. Tennessee's got Brian Maurer. You look at both those, and all of a sudden, does Tennessee not have a lot more options at quarterback if they go Martinez Howell instead of Schrout Maurer?
I'm going to follow up on that specifically, on quarterback development and quarterback evaluation. If Tennessee and this coaching staff can't get Harrison Bailey ready to do something after the bye week, let's say, how much faith should Tennessee fans have in Tennessee's quarterback development and coaching if they can't get him ready to do something either on par or better than what we've seen from Jarrett Garantano?
I think the bigger question right now is, why isn't Garantano any better? Why isn't his development any better? Why is he making the same mistakes in Jim Chaney's second year in Jim Chaney's offense? You know, we heard all preseason about how he's taking care of the ball. He has not thrown interceptions. He's got a much better feel for this offense. And he did for 2.5 quarters, and then adversity hit, and bad things have happened since then. So I don't think it's necessarily about, okay, if Harrison Bailey's not, and we have a thread on the website right now comparing Harrison Bailey's first four throws to Peyton Manning's first four throws in 94. Okay. I mean, we're not doing that comparison. Okay. Let's don't compare Harrison Bailey to a Hall of Famer. So if Harrison Bailey is not, quote, ready to play for the Arkansas game, I don't know that that's as big of an indictment as the fact is you're in another year with Jerry Garantano and another year where he's making the same mistakes that Tennessee fans have seen him make his entire career. Late with the ball, holding on the ball too long, accuracy issues, not handling adversity very well. You know, those type of things, I think, are why Tennessee fans ask that question more than it's going to be whether or not Harrison Bailey's ready to take the reins and say, hey, this is my offense starting next week or in 2 weeks when they go to Arkansas.
How much is Mac Jones about Mac Jones? 400 yards, 3 games in a row, but an abundance of weapons. Now, how good you guys think he is, and how good you think he is in what he's in?
Well, I think he's a perfect example of a guy that's been in the program for 4 years, has steadily developed, and then you're right, he does have a ton of weapons around him to throw to. So I think that obviously helps, but he's a guy that clearly you see the development in, and a guy that was, you know, set back, he watched and he watched and he watched, and then he got his chance and he's making the most of it.
He's a guy who I didn't think was very good when he had to step in for Tua last year when Tennessee was down there. Alabama didn't have a ton of trust in him in the second half. They played that game very conservative, and they have built with him since that point. At the end of last year, they built with him. He started playing better, and then obviously he's playing terrific right now. Now, I think he's got the best line in the SEC in front of him. He's got the best collection of tight ends. He's got the best collection of receivers, and he's got the best running back. He ought to be pretty good.
Is Tennessee just a quarterback away from being really good? We'll ask the guys when we come back, and we'll talk about the future of that position, one player of which may be in Knoxville visiting this weekend. It is the VolQuest Power Hour. It is presented by Old Hickory Credit Union, and you're listening to Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
What was scheduled to be a bye week now has your Titans facing Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Come on, this one should be easy. Big Ben no longer has Ramon Foster protecting him. We do. Kickoff is Sunday at noon on your home for Titans football. 104.5 The Zone.
We are back on the Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue, coming to you live today from Titans Pro Shop, Nissan Stadium, getting ready for Titans Steelers this Sunday. Final segment of the VolQuest Hour with Brent Hubbs and Austin Price, presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. From mortgages to auto loans, they do it all. Visit Old Hickory Credit Union online at ohcu.org. One of the most listened to podcasts on the Midday 180 page is the VolQuest Power Hour. You can also catch it at volquest.com, where they'll post it as well. And, guys, I had referenced the future of the position at quarterback. And when you look at this Tennessee team, there's a lot of people saying they're a quarterback away from being pretty good, maybe even really good in the SEC. Do you buy that in terms of the limits on this Tennessee roster? And what does the future at that position look like? And, Austin, I'll start with you on this.
Well, I think they're a quarterback away from, you know, being very, very competitive in this league and competitive against the Georgias and Alabamas and Florida. Does that mean they're going to start beating all those teams all the time? No, but I think to get to that point, you've got to take that next step, and that's becoming better at that position. So, you know, Tennessee obviously has Caden Salter in this 2021 class coming in. He's a more mobile quarterback, you know, has had a nice senior year to this point, even though they've only played a handful of games. And then, of course, you know, everybody's going to pinpoint Ty Simpson in the 2022 class as the guy, and I've said it for a while, Tennessee can't miss on him. The most important recruit that Tennessee's had in 20 years, you know, because, you know, you have a chance to land the best quarterback this state's ever produced in the modern era. And, again, when you look at the quarterbacks they have on campus and then look at a guy like Ty Simpson, when Lincoln Riley wants you, when Dabo Sweeney wants you, and then Alabama, when those are kind of the three that are right, you know, you're competing against, to me that says a lot, because Clemson's had great quarterbacks for over a decade, dating back to Taj Boyd. Oklahoma's a factory at churning out guys that they either bring in or have transfer in. And then Alabama all of a sudden is getting all kinds of good quarterbacks. Why? Because they've altered how they play offense and they're throwing it all over the lot.
Well, and it's, sorry, not just that position, but offensively from a philosophical standpoint, if Caden Salter comes in and is the guy, how does that change what Tennessee's going to do offensively, or does it?
I think Tennessee has to have an identity, period. I don't think they have an identity on offense right now. Maybe that's because their quarterback play is not very good, and they don't have a lot of trust there. You can alter your identity from year to year. You don't have to be the same thing all of the time. You can adjust it. You can be more of a RPO team, you know, and incorporate some of that stuff and some zone read stuff. You don't need to run the zone read if your quarterback's not going to keep it. Okay. It's kind of pointless to run it. If nobody's worried about the quarterback keeping it out the back door, then there's nothing to read on a zone read. It's a slow developing run play. So, you know, I think the bigger thing is, take your quarterback, and whatever your quarterback can do best, build the identity around them. Okay, there's a team in Nashville going to play the Steelers on Sunday. That's exactly what they've done. They got a great running game. and they went and got a quarterback who can play in that run game because he's a great play action pass quarterback who can stretch the field with his arm. And it's paying off, okay? You don't win in football at any level if you don't get good quarterback play. And so, yeah, Tennessee's got to have good quarterback play, and your identity is built around what your quarterback can do.
Well, I think Brent brings up a good point of adjusting year in, year out, which is what a lot of high school coaches do. You know, unless you're running the wing T, Chad, most high school coaches kind of adjust to the talent they have. If they have a good running back, they run it more. If they have a good quarterback, they throw it more. Same thing here when you're trying to, when you know, obviously at the college level, you like most teams are balanced or pretty balanced. Then, you know, you want to find and call plays and run an offense that is going to bring out the best in the guy that's your trigger man. And right now, I'm not sure Tennessee does that.
All right, prediction time, guys. What is the route for Tennessee to make this thing interesting in the second half? Similar to the Georgia game before it got out of hand, how does Tennessee keep this thing interesting after halftime, I think is the best way to put it. Brent, let's start with you.
Well, I think you got to get to halftime and get through the first quarter and don't get blitzed right out of the gate and give up a bunch of points. But to do that, you know, you're going to need a turnover. You need Alabama to be not as sharp. Then offensively, you've got to move the sticks. You've got to shorten the game, and you got to stay on the field offensively. You can't go three and out. You certainly can't turn the football over. So I think keeping Alabama's offense on the sideline as much as you can in the first half, don't turn the football over offensively. And then defensively, I think you got to try to make it earn them, make them earn it. I don't think you can, you don't need to be giving up, you know, you can't give up 75, 80 yard touchdown plays, nothing cheap. So it's a monumental task because I think Alabama's really good. And I think their offense is so explosive that it puts so much pressure on you offensively to try to match it. I think that's what Georgia in trouble in the second half. You know, Georgia's got the lead at the half, and then once Alabama got the lead, it's like Georgia felt this pressure to try to answer immediately. They started being more aggressive throwing the football, and all of a sudden Stetson Bennett's turning the football over, and that game's out of control and over in a hurry.
Well, I think you got to return the opening kickoff and hope that Bane is there from Dark Knight Rises or the field implodes. In reality, I think you almost have to do what Kentucky did a week ago. And I know Rob and I had this debate on our podcast about, you know, well, if you kind of just want to keep everything in front of you, Alabama's going to gash in the run game. Okay, let them do that up until about the 20. Well, then the field becomes smaller, and it's kind of the bend but don't break. You've got to force them into a bunch of field goals, try to get off the field. They're going to move the ball on you. They're going to score points. They're going to have a lot of yards. But Tennessee's got to find a way to win the turnover battle. They've got to get, I think, a special team score. I mean, like, that's just the facts. A year ago, I think Alabama was kind of shell-shocked when Tua went down. And again, they did not call the same game with Mac Jones at quarterback as they probably will coming up tomorrow at 3:30. So, you know, it's going to be a little bit different. Tennessee was obviously a half a football away from making it 28-20 with 8 minutes to go. And, you know, the rest is history after that, you know, ill-fated quarterback sneak. But, you know, this is a Tennessee team that, you know, I think will rebound, play better. Now, can they stay with Alabama? I don't think so, but I think they will play better.
Forgive me if we mentioned that. Any PTSD from Garantano related to that moment, which was in a career full of low moments, I think you guys would probably rate it number one when he went rogue.
Well, I mean, I don't think that plays the reason why he struggled the last six quarters of football. You know, I think a lot of us, when you walked out of that stadium in Tuscaloosa, thought that you'd probably seen Jared for the last time. Not only did you not see him for the last time, he came back and got that team to a bowl game, threw for 400 yards against Missouri, came off the bench, went 7 of 8 against Kentucky to erase a double-digit deficit, came off the bench to beat Mississippi State. No, my timing's off on that. That was Mississippi State was before that. But the point being, he saved Tennessee a year ago down the stretch to go to a bowl game. So, I mean, if he didn't have PTSD in November last year, he shouldn't have it a year later against Alabama this time.
Guys, always fun with the Power Hour. Appreciate it. And I know you guys post this at VolQuest.com. We will have it on the podcast page as well. Thank you so much, and hopefully for your sake, Bane doesn't show up on Saturday, because that would be tragic for you guys.
Wear a helmet.
We'll get to our 90210 breakdown next week. Okay, Brent?
Jenny?
I'm going to get a movie reference in, Chad. You know, it's a Brent Hub staple here.
We got lots of Chad's going to go Dawson's Creek next week. We're going to break down.
Chad was a big Pacey fan. He was a Pacey fan.
Absolutely. He was a Pacey guy all the way. No question.
I was a Dawson guy all the way. I'm a big James Vanderbeek guy. Even in Varsity Blues, I celebrate his entire catalog, starting with Dawson's Creek. If you want to talk Dawson's Creek, that was in my high school range. We can talk Dawson's Creek next week. These guys can always talk Vols. This has been the VolQuest Power Hour presented by Old Hickory Credit Union. Guys, thank you so much.
Take the rest of the day off.
Thanks, guys. Mark. Appreciate it.
When we come back, we'll get back to our Titans discussion. Plus, John McClain will join us at 12:15, and we'll let you hear a little bit of the Mike Vrabel press conference coming up at 12:30. It's the Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
Brent Daugherty is just like you. I mean, he loves SEC football, live music, bourbon, and all things Middle Tennessee. And you get him for your drive home on the 3HL with Don Davenport this afternoon from 3 to 6 on 104.5 The Zone.